Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome and happy Sunday. Yes, this is Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. I'm looking out of the studio, folks, into the lobby, and I can see six trophies that this radio station has won for being the number one radio station in North Carolina 6 years in a row. This is the show that believes that creativity is so important that I won't define it for you. I want you to create your own definition, but I want to give you ideas and behaviors and concepts that you can riff off of, that you can that will fast track your creation of your own understanding of what it means to be creative. One of the ways I do that is by bringing in interesting guests, and we've got a very interesting guest for you today, folks. Samir Sumal is our guest. Samir is a serial entrepreneur. He is an expert witness. I've not had an expert witness on the show before, and he is also one of the nation's leading historians of our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln. In our early getting together, Samir and I, he's been talking about Abraham Lincoln in a way that makes me just so interested in what he has to say. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Samir. Is there anything you'd like to add to that introduction?
Thank you so much. First off, Carl, you know, in the words of Mr. Lincoln, better to be thought a fool than to speak up and remove all doubt. So I think that introduction serves us well. I'm delighted and honored to be here, one, because I have a genuine and profound respect for you and your energy and your well-documented stewardship both in and out of academia, and unleashing our creative genius and achieving our full potential is near and dear to my heart, as well as it is to many people on this earth. And so it's a noble cause, and I hope I can play a small role in hopefully lifting up the proverbial average on the wonderful track record you have to date of guests.
Well, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And so what was it, Samir? What was, and thank you for those kind words about me, but what was it that first captivated you about the president, Abraham Lincoln? What was it that first attracted your attention?
Well, collectively, I get asked this question, you know, and one, he didn't just go from poverty to the greatest office and being known as, dare I say, you know, let's come out and say it, the greatest American and also someone revered across geographic boundaries, not just from poverty growing up in the log cabin, but emotional poverty, enduring, you know, ongoing melancholy, losing his mother, losing his sister, losing two of his children, the trials and tribulations of war. And to do that with such clarity and to accomplish so much, that, and, you know, he was the first humorist, and Lincoln was funny, and he called laughter the universal evergreen of life, which I think is true. And so there are many reasons that I have a genuine love and dare I say proclivity for Mr. Lincoln. I oftentimes say he's analogous to books in general. The more you read about Mr. Lincoln, the more you realize you don't know as opposed to what you do know.
Right, right. Well, you know, I grew up in my grade school and high school years. I was in Illinois. I was in a place in Illinois where most of my friends, especially in the younger grades, were farm children. And, you know, there in the land of Lincoln, of course, we just adored Abraham Lincoln, and I have appreciated his wit. I don't know that I've ever heard him referred to, as I think you did quickly here, as our first humorist.
First humorist in the White House, probably to you know, and he was funny. Mr. Lincoln, he was actually known for telling racy and dirty jokes, very few of them being recorded. Even in fact, in 1859, at one point, someone said, well, why don't you make a book of all your jokes? And I don't remember the exact line, but he basically said, that would be the end of me. And then, of course, after he was assassinated, nobody would talk about and recite his dirty jokes.
Right.
And so there's trails and traces of them, but they're also so only the clean ones are the ones that we know about. But he was able to speak to the common person, the politician, the businessman, the jury, the judge, by his clarity of thought and his lattice work of mental models, but also in being able to bring humor about as well.
His lattice work of mental models. I love that phrase. Well, you know, one of the funny lines that I recall that was credited to Lincoln was when he was in D.C., Washington, D.C., and he's referring to the farmers back in Illinois. And does he have a line where he says something like, the farmers don't want all the land. They just want the land that touches theirs.
You know, I recall that, you know, he did say he would have used his lines multiple times. The first recorded time of that line is prepped, as Mr. Lincoln might say it, so not to be cornered. In the Mexican War, when he was a Whig and the Democrats were pursuing war with Mexico, and he was against war with Mexico, though he did end up voting for every commitment to the troops, and he was accused of that later, and he actually picked somebody up by their collar on stage during one of his debates with Judge Douglas and said that's absolutely false. It may not have been with Judge Douglas, but he said that the Democrats' rationale, Carl, in wanting to annex Mexico, he said, reminds him of the farmer who claimed he wasn't greedy. When that farmer said, I just want that land that joins mine.
I love it. But thanks for putting that into that context. That's great. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, the notion that he has this populist piece of poetry, right? The very best political line I think that anybody ever wrote, of the people, for the people, by the people. That always captivated me, man. The first time I read that line, I thought, oh, this is somebody that I just need to show great regard for because of that insight, of that
uh-huh.
declaration, of that determination.
You know, there's so many lines of, Mr. Lincoln, you know, government, of course, of the people, by the people, for the people. That was during the Gettysburg Address at Gettysburg Cemetery. You know, Mr. Lincoln, there's just incredible wisdom as you study the complete and collected works. There's so much that he had an eloquence in the way that he spoke. I mean, something as simple as, we can complain because, you know, the rose bushes have thorns, or rejoice because the thorn bushes have roses.
Yay.
I mean, that just puts so much of how we can look at something in perspective.
And a really important insight for us right here and now, because I confess I'm really focusing on all of our thorns right here and now. Well, folks, that's the end of our first segment with Samir. We'll be back with a couple more, so come on back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for coming back. Our show today is an interview with Samir Samal. Samir is a serial entrepreneur. He's an expert witness. In the first segment of the show, Samir was sharing his extraordinary knowledge about Abraham Lincoln. He's seen as a leader in leading historian on Abraham Lincoln. And I went to Knox College, Samir, and at Knox College, the main administrative building is the old Main building, and Old Main is the site, I believe, of the last remaining site of Lincoln-Douglas debates that preceded the Civil War. When I was there in school in the late 60s, every year there would be a reenactment of the Lincoln-Douglas mm-hmm. debate there on the stairs of Old Main. And I know you've really studied, again, Lincoln broadly, but also you've got some interesting things to say about that series of debates.
Thanks, Carl. You know, of course, you know, there are five or six, maybe 10 things that people know about Abraham Lincoln, but they feel this incredible love and connection for him, and they don't know why, which is why the subject of Mr. Lincoln is so evergreen and endearing. And in some ways, I'm a conduit to that proliferation. Of course, you know, the Galesburg debate with Knox College, I believe that was October of early October, October 6th or 7th. You know, that had they took turns going back and forth. So in that debate, there was an opening speech, there was a reply, then there was a rebuttal. And, you know, Mr. Lincoln, you know, took in that particular debate, I believe the focus was slavery and its expansion into new territories. And of course, Judge Douglas, you know, advocated popular sovereignty. And, you know, what made that debate unique was that, you know, it was the Freeport Doctrine that, you know, it came right after the Freeport debate where Judge Douglas introduced the idea that territories could effectively block slavery despite the Dred Scott decision. And at Knox, Mr. Lincoln pressed Douglas on those inconsistencies in that position. Douglas, of course, accused Mr. Lincoln of supporting racial equality, and Mr. Lincoln pushed back and separated his moral opposition from slavery from, you know, societal, you know, being equal. You know, he said, you know, just because I oppose slavery doesn't mean that I want to take doesn't mean I do or don't want to take a black person for being my wife, because as Judge Douglas accused that. So, you know, that was of course a very important debate. Generally speaking, the Lincoln Douglas debates are one of those 10 things that people know about Mr. Lincoln. You know, freed the slaves, president during Civil War, 16th president, on the penny, on the $5 bill, grew up in a log cabin, had the Lincoln-Douglas debates. And it's just fascinating, before I comment on the debates, to think about, there's so many people in history. I mean, how many senators who didn't become president can we name, even from the 1900s or the 1800s, aside from Judge Douglas?
Right.
You know, it's because of Mr. Lincoln. So, you know, there was no moderator. You know, so to just comment on the debates in general, to give our audience some
Please
perspective.
Do. Yes.
No fact checking, no audience questions. I mean, each person spoke for kind of uninterrupted, and then there was, you know, and they, you know, they traveled together and basically followed each other along rail lines. I mean, there was you know, of course, the audience, as these debates got published, and Mr. Lincoln was very smart, he had them published extensively. Judge Douglas didn't want to really debate Mr. Lincoln because he knew that would rise up, but he couldn't help himself. He kind of had to accept the challenge. And Mr. Lincoln had followed him around at other debates, and he knew he was a difficult opponent. But Judge Douglas and Mr. Lincoln also liked each other, and personally speaking, and they never crossed the line of making. I mean, they were adversarial in these debates, but you know, I've talked to some of my friends and scholars about this, and I brought up a point that some of them have said is original, and it's maybe because Judge Douglas actually liked Mr. Lincoln that he did debate with him, because if he really doesn't dislike him, he would have avoided it and absconded from it because he knew it would benefit him. The brilliance of these debates, you know, some of my favorite lines, you know, at the end of one particular debate, it may have been the debate in Quincy, which maybe it was debate number five. Mr. Lincoln said, you know, now I don't want to call Judge Douglas a liar, but when I square him up, I don't know what else to call him.
So where was the Republican Party's formation at the time of the debates? Had it formally been launched yet?
Yeah, it had been launched.
Okay.
You know, Mr. Lincoln was part of that.
Yes.
He was a big, you know, he was kind of the de facto leader. I mean, it was new, though. It was only, yes, I think, 3 or 4 years old. I think the party was formed in 1854.
Okay.
It was really triggered by the outrage over the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which you know, outlawed, you know, which allowed, excuse me, allowed slavery to expand based on that popular sovereignty. So the Republican Party emerged as this coalition of anti-slavery groups, former Whigs, Free Soil Party members, you know, anti-slavery Democrats. And so the Republicans were the challenger party, not the dominant party leading into those debates. They were stronger, you know, in northern states. And, you know, the central platform was to stop the expansion of slavery. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, some of the – so I'm oftentimes asked, Carl, you know, oh, Samir, you know, tell me something that, you know, you think I wouldn't know have heard about Abraham Lincoln. And there's so many lines in that. Mr. Lincoln also – there's also five or six lines that says that's an unfair question. But, you know, among his – you know, he once said in the Lincoln-Douglas debates, he said – one of his lines, he said, Judge Douglas – you know, he said Judge Douglas is guilty of the horse chess analogy. He's created such a specious and fantastic arrangement of words that he has actually proven that a horse chestnut is the same as a chestnut colored horse.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. How wonderful. Well, we've got about a minute left in this segment. Is there anything more you want to add to the debates, or should we move on to another area of Lincoln's works?
You're the proverbial shepherd, I'm the sheep, Carl, so okay. You tell me where we should go next.
Okay, well, where we should go next is, because it's a good time to take a break. When we come on back, folks, Samir's got a lot of good stuff to share with us, so come on back.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. We've been listening to Samir Samal, one of the country's foremost experts on Abraham Lincoln. Samir, the show is about creativity. I know that in some of our warm-up conversations, you reflected on the creative aspects of Abraham Lincoln's life and what we might learn from those. You want to revisit those for our audience, please?
Absolutely. I love the theme of your podcast and the conversation. I mean, Mr. Lincoln, he was a self-taught thinker. He had originality. He had, of course, very little formal education, so he built all ideas from scratch. I mean, this forced first kind of principle thinking, like, you know, not copying from others. He had an obsession with, you know, clarity, and that made his writing and speaking innately powerful. Of course, you know, he used all these stories, analogies, and humor to explain, but he was a creative communicator. I mean, he had a deep thinking habit. He'd sit alone for long periods, whereas like Secretary of War Stanton would rush things off and have scribbles. Mr. Lincoln, you know, he's what we'd maybe call, you know, slower thinking. And one example of this is the way Mr. Lincoln studied a lucid. So he studied a lucid, you know, not for math, really, but to study logical reason. He learned how to define clearly. I mean, to look at step by step, how to avoid assumptions. He wanted to understand, you know, what to quote unquote demonstrate. So, you know, in summary, his habits made him creative. I mean, he edited speeches multiple times, creativity through what you would say is refinement. Or, you know, as I call writing sometimes, you know, it's like a rug. You just keep hitting it, more dust is going to come out. But, you know, he had cross-domain learning that I alluded to earlier, of course, with Elucid, with politics, with law. He was just interdisciplinary. And you know, Mr. Lincoln didn't become creative by learning more per se. He became creative by thinking deep. While others, you know, maybe memorized, Mr. Lincoln studied, and his creativity was not necessarily talent. It was clarity plus logic plus maybe humor and some emotional intelligence.
Well, to be a great writer, you have to be a great thinker, right? To be able to put your thoughts down clearly on a piece of paper means that, of course, you've organized that thinking in a disciplined fashion, and he's just extraordinary as a writer. Now, I know that you have absorbed some of his habits into your own regimen of how you get your work done. You want to share a couple of those with us?
Yeah, you know, one, I think I've studied how Mr. Lincoln built relationships and how he tried to give remembering and receive without forgetting and resist the temptation at times to say things that you want to kind of put toothpaste back in the tube. He was incredibly benevolent in giving people advice that truly was better for him. And I've had situations where we're approached and I'm referred and I tell people, look, I don't even think that it makes sense like that you be a client of ours, but based on what you're telling me, here are some of the things I would go ask existing vendors. Here's some of the things I'd ask people that work for you. And of course, many times people come back and they do want to work with us, even when I try to push them away. But, you know, I've told people like, look, I could see they come ready to work with them. I say, look, what's better is that you go and cut expenses and be a better steward of capital. And I'll give you an example. There was one time a cattle dealer, and he was a young man. He was and he had a contract for some cattle. And that contract was violated. He came to Mr. Lincoln to file suit. Mr. Lincoln looked at the case and took it on and said, I think you got a good case there. But he said, young man, you're a sprightly, energetic fellow. And if I take on this case and I win, and there's a good chance you're going to win, you will come to me for every little disagreement. And you'll spend more time hiring me and pursuing trifling sums relative to the output you can have in focusing on your business. And my advice to you, and I won't charge you a cent for the work so far, is you drop this case and you get back to business.
Nice. Oh, yeah. And did he?
He did.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorites called, you know, he had two landowners that both came to him, farmers, to represent him because they were in dispute in their property line. And he told them both he would meet them, and they didn't know the other was showing up. They showed up at his office, and he said, you two gentlemen have both come to me to represent you, and there's a good chance that if I represent one of you is going to win or lose, one of you is going to be really upset, and people are probably going to die because of that at some point. And what's better is you guys resolve this. So he said, I'm going to lock you both in this office, and I'm going to come back in 3 or 4 hours. We're going to see what happens. Uh-huh. And he did that and came back, and they were laughing. And that's where Mr. Lincoln and his honesty, integrity, his moral clarity, the way he approached being a lawyer, that's why he's the inspiration for one of the companies that I've launched that's funded by a group of investors called Legal Experts AI. And Mr. Lincoln said, you know, life is about raising a cause to produce an effect and then to fight that effect. So there's some of the ways that Mr. Lincoln has been amalgamated into my being as a professional entrepreneur.
Well, thank you. And thank you. And those are some good final words for the show, folks. We've run out of time. Samir, thank you so much for joining us. Just to remind the listeners that the show will be posted on Wednesday. We'll have contact information. Samir will provide links so that you can follow up on your own interests in Abraham Lincoln and his work and his thoughts. And so thank you so much, Samir. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Carl. Honor and pleasure to be here.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.